I want this team to be a team that the Irish public are really proud of. I won't accept that we can't play from the back or we can't pass the ball.
I did it at Dalymount Park and rolled one into his own net.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Football on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
Well, you're welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 8 o'clock. We're delighted to be joined by a man who made 53 appearances for the Republic of Ireland, won silverware with Tottenham Hotspur, and has managed Newcastle, Norwich, Brighton, and now Nottingham Forest. Chris Hughton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you all.
You're very welcome. Great to be speaking to you. Chris, I just thought about this when I was thinking about speaking to you today. What was your best moment in football? What's your best moment in the game today? Is there anything that comes to mind very easily?
Well, there are two things that come to mind, and it's for me, it's whenever I'm asked, it's very difficult to divide the two, and it happened to be one, of course, playing for your country, and one happened to be playing for your club. So, firstly, the 1981 FA Cup final, one I think because the manner in which we won the game. But also, it was a team, apart from probably three individuals, where most of us had, it was our first achievement in the game. It was our first trophy in the game. And of course, in the manner and the style which we won it is one that will always be remembered. But of course, it's very difficult to speak about moments and not mention Euro 88, because that's at a different level. Of course, that's at national level. And for everybody in the game and players, the highest accolade you can have in the game is playing at international level. And again, that was our first championship, and the manner in which we conducted ourselves, I think I'll always remember that.
There's a photo of you, Chris, I think with Mick Byrne. I think it might have been after the England game. You just have your arms aloft. What stood out for that game in Stuttgart? Because that was just an incredible day.
Well, I think probably the biggest part is the rivalry, of course, always between England and Ireland. And of course, what we would have had, if I looked at a starting 11, you would have had a fair percentage of the team that had been born in England, but of course would have had dual parentage and would have qualified because of parents. So I think that added more to it. We were huge underdogs, as normal. England would be the favourites to win that one. We rode our luck. It was an incredibly hot day. We were certainly grateful to Paddy Bonner and his exploits in goal. But they're the moments that don't happen so often, and reaching a finals for the first time ever, first game against England and then beating England, doesn't happen too often.
And then you played Soviet Union off the park during the week in Hanover after that game. That was one of the greatest Irish performances.
Well, that was probably probably my time in with the Irish team. That was probably the biggest disappointment, because we played that well that it was the type of performance that really warranted a victory. And of course, we win that game, then certainly things would have changed very much going into that last game. So probably that was the disappointment after such a good performance, and I thought it was. I think in my time it was probably the best performance. I think best team performance, and to do it at a championship, and to do it, on the back of a few days before having gone through what we went through in beating England, then that was so disappointed that we never won.
There's that photo of you and Ruud Gullit battling down the touchline in the game against the Dutch in Gelsenkirchen, which we sadly lost that Wim Kieft fluke goal. That was peak Gullit at the time. This was Ruud Gullit at his peak. That was some battle you must have enjoyed.
Thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm reminded of it very, very often because, you know, I think in our playing careers, there are some players that have lots and lots of high moments and very visibly high moments, winning trophies, and some not so much. You know, and I've been quite fortunate as regards, you know, some success in the game. But as the years go on, you know, you are further away from having played. But that picture always reminds me, and I see that picture often, I must admit, probably in my playing career, that is the picture that I see more often than any other picture. And I knew him well. You know, I remember playing against Holland at Daly Mount Park. This was right at the start of my career, and a very young Ruud Hollet played, I think, in three different positions. They came back from, I think this is right, came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2, and he started in the back, played in midfield, and then went up front, scored, I think scored one goal, and then dropped back to, and that was him getting himself on the map and such. So yeah, wonderful memories, and say that picture is one that I see more often than any other.
We lost Jack in the last year, Jack Charlton, Chris. He had an impact on so many people. The nation changed, I think, because of the performances of the team. What impact did he have on you, Chris?
A massive impact. I think everybody talks, you know, about Jack as a person. They speak about the way that we played. We changed, certainly changed the makeup of the way that the team played. It was obviously a more direct style that people speak about. Jack as an individual, and you know the sort of person Jack was, you know it suited the Irish nation because Jack was a very down to earth individual, no airs and graces about him. Probably what Jack didn't get as much credit as what he should have done is his coaching and management ability, and what he did do, he changed the style, he saw a way that we could be more successful with the team that we had and the quality that we had. And I think he probably doesn't get enough credit for that. I mean, the stories, of course, everybody is aware of them. Probably, you know, probably Tony Cascarino and Andy Townsend are probably the two that got closest to him on a lot of the stories, and that they tell them very, very good. But there isn't anybody in that squad, whether you was a main player, whether he was in a squad, that Jack didn't affect. And it was, of course, a very sad passing, but in some ways a very happy one because he affected so many people's lives.
It was the press before the press almost, Chris, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, as I say, he was, and it's not as if Jack hadn't had success at club level. He had, and you know, you only get offered an international job if you are, you know, a certain level or you've managed at a certain level. But he had, say, a way of playing that he felt would benefit the players that we've got and would get a success.
You didn't only play against Ruud Hollet as a top star at the time. You encountered Diego Maradona at Lansdowne Road earlier in your Ireland career.
Yes, we did, yeah. And probably, you know, there aren't too many of us that would have thought when we were playing against him that day that he was going to become what he became. We knew that he was a prodigy. We knew that he was the young sort of star player. To go on to the heights that he did and to be the world class and, you know, would be in that category. You know, I think apart from if you're going back a little bit further, and of course, Pele comes into it. But if I'm looking at, you know, those that were born after a certain period of time, you know, he will be right up there. For most people, the best player in the world. We didn't know that at the time. I think probably if we had, there would have been a few more clamouring for his shirt afterwards, I would have thought.
So it was only the genesis of what we would see in 86 when you played against him.
Yes, I mean, of course, players are judged by their achievements on the pitch. Some have done it more at international level than others. And of course, you know, Maradona was one that almost sort of single-handed won Napoli the Italian league at a time when it was incredibly difficult to win it, and of course success at international level as well. So yes, he was aware of the player that he was, but I don't think anybody would anticipate that he would have, you know, been the player that he became.
So your mother, Chris, like my mother, is from Limerick and emigrated to London earlier in her life.
Yes, it was a story, of course, of so many people. Of course, in the 50s, my mother went to London to work. My father went from Ghana to London to study and ended up working. And that was a story. That was a story of so many of the Caribbeans, of those from the African nations, of Ireland. And so went to London to work. And of course, that's where my father thankfully met my mother and settled in East London, very, very close to West Ham football ground. And that was it. And very much we were brought up in a working class family with working class values.
You were the first black player to play for Ireland, Chris, before Paul McGrath. What were attitudes like at the time?
I've been asked this question a lot. I mean, attitudes, I can divide the two, actually. In my time, I never experienced any racism in Ireland, in my time, on the streets or the terraces, in my time. Of course, the time when I made my debut for the Republic was probably almost at the height of what we experienced at the football grounds here in England. And at that time, I would have been the only black player in the Tottenham team. Garth Crooks came after me. But it was a regular occurrence, you know, playing away from home. And it was something, unfortunately, you expected, not accepted, but you expected it. And that would be either from individuals in the crowd, that would be opposition players, or that would be large sections of crowds. And it was something that something we expected, you know, weekly.
How did you deal with it, Chris?
You dealt with it because you had to. If I look at where we are at this moment, I mean, even with still some of the racism that the game is experiencing now, particularly I think through social media and so. But I think what players have now, they have a support network. They are in a change room that has become a far more multicultural change room. And that part of it is very much different. In that era, you were very much on your own. And you didn't accept it, but you just had to get on with it. And probably the individuals that didn't, that were on the brunt of it, that didn't get on with it as such, you know, were seen very much as, you know, you've got a chip on your shoulder and so on. So that was it. You had to get on with it. Your support network was always going back to your family, going back to your own environment, your groups of friends that you have. But yes, you just had to get on with it.
Did it generate a huge amount of anger in you, Chris?
It did. But you know, this is something that was constant. And you know, what we have to remember, and I'm not saying that the age now is, you know, so much better, but I do think there are differences now, and I say there are the support networks, but that was society. So you know, it wasn't just that we experienced racism in our football world, is that you know, we experienced racism in general, and it's only now because of what the game and life has gone through, Black Lives Matter, etc., that so many more people reflecting on what it was back then. And I'm not talking about the black community that was at the front of it, but I'm thinking about people in general. And there are things that they accepted then that they now look back on and think were wrong. And I think that's where we were then. It wasn't just the football environment. It was racism in general. And you, of course, were in and around that one. And you suffered the consequences of it.
Yeah, we've seen the disgusting abuse of footballers and social media in recent years. And obviously still a problem. And we had the blackout on social media. What's your view, Chris, when you see the booing of the taking of a knee?
It's for me personally, when I hear that, it takes me back to the racist chants that I would hear on a football pitch, you know, from the crowds, because there is no doubt that taking the knee is a decision, and there are some players that have chose not to take the knee. And most of the players that have chose not to take the knee are because they feel that there is not enough being done in this present time. And so they feel that by taking the knee, that it's not making any impact at all. So I don't think anybody can look at taking the knee and not look at it for what it is, you know, symbol, for what it is. It's about clearing our lives and the game of racism and supporting those that have been through it. So I don't think anybody can think it can be any different. So for me to hear people booing it, it's for me the same impression that I get for somebody that would have been making a racist chant.
Do you find in 2021 this is dispiriting, or do you actually think with people taking a stand that things will improve over time and the environment will improve?
Yeah, I think what happens is that you get buoyed and you get lifted and then something happens and you. I think there's no doubt that certain things have changed. Now, whether that's because of organisations either putting enough pressure on us. So, you know, I look at the media and I see more people of colour in the media now. You turn on the television and adverts are more people of colour in adverts now than were before. So I think some things have changed, but it has to be about education and mentality, you know. So we don't want... You know, if we talk about black managers or black people in the media or ethnic people in the media, is that you want individuals to get jobs because they are the best people for the jobs. So that's something that will never change. So it's dispiriting at times because you get lifted. And certain circumstances which you think are good. I think the response in general, for the nation, I would say, or the country, the general response to Black Lives Matter, I think was good. But unfortunately, whenever you have good, sometimes seems to drag out those that think different. And I think that's what social media is experiencing at the moment.
You've had a very interesting career, Chris, from Tottenham to West Ham as a player to working with Brian Kerr with Ireland and not too far off from qualifying for the World Cup. Then you got into club management, Newcastle, Norwich, Brighton, now Nottingham Forest. How crazy is club management? When I see Chris Hughton getting promotions with Newcastle and Brighton and then it not working out eventually, do you have to just accept that this is a crazy game you're involved in?
Well, I don't think it's accept. I don't think that's the...
word.
The right word. I'm trying to find the right word, because certainly when there have been positions that I've been in that I felt I should have still been in, it's not something that I would have accepted. But what you have to be able to do is move on, because the way the game is now, the type of ownership that we have now, the pressures on clubs and players, it's different now. You know, the club that had the old stable board of directors and ownership, you know, generally doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's a new type of ownership, and I think what comes with that one is a thirst for success and early success, and you know, the merry-go-round of managers, you know, that won't change. You know, if anything, at, you know, some stage it will get worse. So I think what you have to be thick-skinned in this game. You have to be able to move on. You know, when somebody goes against you, you're at a club and you lose your job at a club, you've got to be able to move on to that next one and give everything into that next job. And probably that's what will happen, I think, in management. And in, you know, what was management now is management stroke first team coach. You know, if you look on the continent, there's a big movement. You know, you will have some coaches that, you know, that have managed at 7, 8, 9 clubs before, you know, they move on again. So I think it's something that will happen more regularly in the game.
So is it very much the remit now with you and Nottingham Forest, the club with a huge legacy, European Cups of 79 and 80, to get promoted to the Premier League? Is that almost like the mission?
Yes, it is. In which fact, what I'm realistic enough is that I'm a club that's a wonderful club, and I'm thoroughly enjoying my time here. But I'm realistic; it's been a long time, and what we wanted. I think we're in a championship at the moment where probably on paper, you know, you're looking at the three teams that come down, similar to last year, that are very, very strong. They'll be favourites to go up, but you know, we want to be a team that can challenge for playoffs. You know, if I'm looking at what Barnsley did last season, there are numerous clubs, you know, Blackburns and so, that were very much around them, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th places and pushing to get into them playoff positions. And I think that that's where a club like this has to be. So what we need to certainly recruit well enough this summer to give us the best possible chance that we can.
The day in the life of a modern manager in English football, Chris, I'd say you don't get any sleep. What are you at from dawn until dusk every day?
Long hours. I must admit that most managers like to create a good environment at the training ground, because that's where the bulk of your work is. And what you want to be able to do, irrespective of winning games or losing games, you know, you want to enjoy going into work. And so I think if you are able to create an environment at your work where you're getting on with people, there's good people doing good jobs, then that makes that part easier. I mean, I've always been quite fortunate that I'm a decent sleeper. I wake up very early, which is probably the imbalance, but I can get off to sleep. I try to get things off my chest as quick as I can. But generally, we're in early. I have a good workforce around me. What we certainly find in the Championship, particularly last season, is what was the difficulties is the volume of games, is that the amount of work that you would like to do at the training ground, you're not able to do. And it's very much about preparation, playing the games, recovery, and then going on to the next game. And we had a few real tough spells of games where we're playing 7 games in 3 weeks on 2 or 3 occasions during the season. So that takes over a lot of it. But the most important thing is you've got to enjoy what you're doing. Makes it easier if you're winning games, but you've got to enjoy what you're doing.
I don't know if you're comparing your nose to Mick McCarthy now, who's down in Cardiff in the Championship, who's going to get up first. Do you follow Ireland? Do you still keep a close eye on what we're doing and how we're doing?
Yeah. Yes, of course. And what I haven't been able to, sometimes because of the nature of work, I haven't been able to get over to as many of the international games as what I used to before. But yes, I mean, of course, always following, always looking to see how the team are doing, the changes that have made. Watching the games can be nervous and frustrating in the same breath as such. But of course, always want the team to win, always.
Hypothetically now, in the future, if there was ever a vacancy, is international management and is Ireland something you could ever be interested in?
I would never disclude it. You know, I've been asked on numerous occasions, and my answer has always been is that my priority at the moment and what I enjoy the most is the day-to-day working with the players, the day-to-day decision making, the volume of games that you play, and of course international football. Of course, the difference is that the profile is higher. There's no doubt about it. And of course, to be able to represent your country at management level, you know, something very special. But on that balance at this moment, my drive is still about, you know, day-to-day working and coaching of the players.
And you got the great Andy Reid there working with you under 23s. Did you ever meet Mr. Clough? See that you're not in the Forest now. Did you ever encounter him?
Yes. And this was in my... and I actually had sat down with him and had a five-minute conversation with him. This was coming towards the end of my career. After a long career at Tottenham, I went to West Ham. We played Nottingham Forest in the semi-final of the... Cup and unfortunately it was remembered from a West Ham point of view, it was remembered for the wrong things. Tony Gale got sent off after about 20 minutes of the game and he was distraught, and the West Ham supporters sang for the remainder of the game, and you know, that was one thing that was spoken about because it was always going to be difficult. So we lost that game, but I remember having changed, what have you, coming out and going past the Nottingham Forest changing room, and Brian Clough was in there. And I remember sitting down, speaking with him and somebody else, I must admit, I can't remember who the other person was. It wasn't somebody that was so familiar. We're chatting away for about 5 minutes. And that's something that I always, always remember.
As a Tottenham aficionado, I have to ask you, how did you feel when Ricky Villa scored that goal?
I think the same as everybody else. I think it was all about the ones that could catch him, and then it's the ones that had enough energy to catch him. But it was a wonderful story because Ricky was very popular. There was, of course, a real big story in the first game where he didn't play so well. The video pictures of him being taken off and then walking straight into the changing room, and of course in them days the Wembley changing room was a long way away, behind one of the goals. So the manager had a big decision to make going into that second game, whether he left Ricky out, one because of maybe sense of something that he'd done when he came off that he perhaps shouldn't have done, or maybe didn't play so well, the reason why he was taken off. So a big decision by the manager, and of course the fact that he scored that winning goal, and such a good winning goal, I think says that he made the right decision.
Finally, Chris, will England win the Euros?
big question. If I have put money on the favourites, I think they are the favourites. And I also think going into the Euros, I think France were the favourites. Germany would have been right up there, but I think Germany would have been up there because of their past and because, you know, how successful they are in championships. But I think on paper, you know, man for man, there is no doubt that the England team and the England squad is as good as anybody. And probably, you know, after France would certainly, I think, have the best squad. So what you've got is you've got the team for me that are the best team at this moment that are still in the Euros. So if you ask me if I think they will win it, yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do. But I think I think everybody's always a little bit scared when it comes to the England national team, because I think there have been so many times when it's been so close and something didn't happen. But I think there's a little bit of a different mentality now. I think the manager has done an incredible job, because he's got some real tough decisions to make. And we all know if England had lost to Germany, that the manager would have, or that the criticisms of the manager would have been that he didn't do this and he didn't play him and so on. And these are the things that he's had to deal with. So I think he's done a super job. And yes, I do think England will win it.
Well, Chris Hughton, you're an absolute gentleman. I wish you the very best with your promotion push with Nottingham Forest. I hope you get it back into the Premier League. The best luck for the new season. And thanks so much for speaking to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk.
No, you're very welcome. And I look forward to speaking to you again.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetZetGo.ie.